This sermon was recorded at Christ Church Overland Park, a congregation that seeks to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom.
Two guys are they're stuck on a desert island, and one guy is like totally freaking out because he's just convinced they're going to die on this island, and you know it's going to be this long, horrific, drawn-out death of starvation. And the other guy is totally at peace. He's just relaxed, kind of, you know, even laying out on the beach, you know. And the guy that's freaking out, he's just like, "What's your problem?" Like, "What?" He's like, just promise. I promise you, it's going to be okay. Just settle down." And that does nothing. The guy just continues to get all anxious and worried. And the guy says, "Look, it's going to be okay. I promise. Don't worry. We're going to be okay." Doesn't do anything. The guy just continues all day, just freaking out. You know, "We're going to die here," and da-da-da-da. Finally, the guy says, "Look, I make $10 million a year. I tithe. My pastor will find us." Pastor joke money. That'll get you there. I'm sure it's been used a lot this fall. This morning is Commitment Sunday, and it's the day when we bring our financial commitments for the coming year of ministry, and it's even heightened this year because of our fundraising effort, Bring Life to Others. Today is about our church, our vision, about who God is and what He's calling us to do and what it's going to take to get there. But today is also about us as people, as followers of Jesus, and our hearts, and our stewardship of the things that God has entrusted to us. So we're going to talk about the fullness of life that is associated with generosity. And to do that, we're going to look at the Feast of First Fruits. We don't preach from the book of Leviticus very often, but we're going to today. Leviticus 23, God instructs the people. If you read that chapter, the entire chapter in Leviticus 23, it's all about the feast, the prescribed feast that the people of Israel celebrate every year. And there's seven of them. And these festivals were designed to bring the people together in celebration of the Lord and His blessings. And so one of those celebrations is the Feast of First Fruits. The Feast of First Fruits, it took place at the beginning of the harvest, no surprise. It's interesting, this word, first fruits, it's all one word. It's the combination of it, so it's two Hebrew words that they just put together. And one of those Hebrew words means first, as in best. The other Hebrew word means first, as in sequence, first to appear. So they just stuck them together. First fruits. So it refers to both the sequence, the first things that grow, but also the quality, the best things that grow. At the beginning of the harvest, they brought bundles of grain, wheat or barley, the first and best grain. They gave it to the priest, who waved it before the Lord as an offering. Waving the wheat. Kansas fans, this is where this comes from. It is where it comes from. And no one, of course, knows it. When it actually became a tradition at KU in the 20s, people still made those connections. No longer, as is true in so much of our culture. We've lost connection with where these traditions actually come from. But it came from ancient agrarian cultures, all of them, not just Israelites. They would, when they offered a sacrifice of their harvest to the Lord, that's what they would do. They would wave the grain, wave the wheat. And Leviticus tells us clearly that they were not to eat any of this grain until they had celebrated the first fruits, until they had made their offering. And it's interesting that for them, this was a celebration. It was a party. When we hear Commitment Sunday, we don't hear party. Something that feels like a hard discipline for us was actually a party for them. And so I want us to look deeper into this with the hope that maybe we can figure out why were they so joyous and perhaps we are not. How can we find more of that joyous spirit for ourselves? You know, God calls his people to offer him their first and their best. And so what kind of life is associated with generosity? And I want to talk about four things: gratitude, dependence, faith, and joy. Gratitude, dependence, faith, and joy. The Feast of First Fruits was, first of all, it was about gratitude for God's care in the past. First fruits, it's described initially in the book of Leviticus, but then it's expounded upon in the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy. And in Deuteronomy, Moses gives more detailed instructions about what they are to do when they bring their offering. And he says that when they bring their bundle of grain, they're to testify to how God has been faithful to them and cared for them in the past. And for their particular situation, it meant remembering and acknowledging that they used to be slaves in Egypt, but God delivered them and was going to give them the land that he promised. So when they brought their offering, they were remembering the ways that God had been faithful to them in the past. They declared these things out loud to each other, reminding themselves about all the ways that God had cared for them. And so giving their first fruits was a symbol of their gratitude for all that the Lord had done for them. Now, I'm not asking anyone to give a speech today, but it's true that generosity flows from recognizing all that God has done for us. We should call to mind the ways that God has been faithful to us in the past, the ways he's taken care of us, both individually and as a church. You know, I took a moment this morning as I was preparing just to remember and give thanks for all the ways that God has been faithful and blessed me and my family. And of course, like you, you know, our lives are also marked by disappointments and pain. That was certainly true for the ancient Israelites. Of course, our lives are also touched by disappointments and pain. But those things don't erase, they don't negate all the ways that God has been faithful and all the things that he has done for us. And so as we approach Thanksgiving, and by the way, I don't know how many of you are hosting Thanksgiving, but the question was posed to me today. Someone who's hosting Thanksgiving for the first time said, "What should I do for the prayer, the Thanksgiving prayer?" So if you're wondering what to do for the Thanksgiving prayer, Google Litany, L-I-T-A-N-Y, Litany of Thanksgiving. It's in the prayer book. It's about 10 prayers, responsive prayers, short prayers. It's very easy. You can print it out, get everyone a copy, and it's a way that everyone can participate in the prayer. It's a great prayer. That was for free. So as we approach Thanksgiving, it's appropriate for us to be thinking in these terms. And so I would like to just take a moment right now, to create a little bit of space for you to remember the ways that God has taken care of you and to give him thanks. So let's just do that right now. Generosity flows from gratitude for God's care in the past. But it's also about dependence on God in the present. The Feast of First Fruits, it was an acknowledgement that the benefits of the harvest came to them by God's grace. You know, the worldview of the ancient Israelites was quite a bit different from ours in many, many ways. But one of the things that was just absolute for them was that they believed that God, Yahweh, was the world's sole creator. And they believed this the way that we believe 2 plus 2 equals 4. It just wasn't something that they had any doubt about or any question about. And as creator, God was the mover behind everything. Nothing, absolutely nothing happened that was beyond God's reach or concern. And we see this in prayers in the Old Testament. One that David prayed in 1 Chronicles 29. Here's just a small part of it. It says, "Yours, Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the majesty and the splendor. For everything in heaven and earth is yours. Yours, Lord, is the kingdom. You are exalted as head over all. Wealth and honor come from you. You are the ruler of all things." So that prayer acknowledges a dependence on God, the one who is over all things, the ruler of everything. So even though they had planted the crops and harvested them, I mean, that's a lot of hard work. They didn't have combines. This was a lot of hard work. But even so, they primarily believed that the result was God's doing. It was His provision. So that ultimately, they didn't own the crops. Rather, God had provided them the crops as a gift. And so the Feast of First Fruits was their way of saying, "God, this is all yours. Everything we have is a gift from you. It all comes from your hand." And so when we give generously, we acknowledge that God is the one who provides for us. Everything we have is because He is the creator. He is the sustainer of all things. And we give to Him and His work from our first fruits because we believe that our money and our possessions are a result of His grace. The question is, do we? Do we properly acknowledge God for all that we have, whether we have much or little? Do we acknowledge that it's all the Lord's and He has essentially given it to us? When we give from our leftovers, if there are any, it shows that despite all of our rhetoric to the contrary, our belief in God is not that strong after all. It reveals that deep down, that seed that is in every little child is still there in us that says, "Mine. It's mine. What I have is mine. I've earned it. I've worked hard for it." And yes, that's true. You have. You have. I know you. You work hard. You're incredibly hardworking people. I work hard. But people in Gulu work hard. They work hard and have nothing. So hard work alone doesn't explain it all, does it? You know, there's more to it. We do work hard, and that's to be commended. But we also have to take God into account. And that's what we talked about last week. We talked about the parable of the rich fool. That's what he didn't do. He worked hard. He had a great crop. That's all to be celebrated. He just didn't take God into account. That was his mistake. And so we counteract that part in us, that child in us that says, mine. We counteract that by opening up our hearts and our hands and giving God the first fruits. And so I want to take a few moments here just to acknowledge, yes, Lord, all my blessings come from you. They all come from you. Even my very life, it's a gift that you've given me. So let's take a moment just to express that to the Lord. Generosity is about dependence on God in the present. So we've got gratitude for God's care in the past, dependence on God in the present, but also first fruits was about faith in God for the future. What we might have a difficult time visualizing in our minds is that the offering of first fruits was actually a great act of faith. They were giving before the bulk of the harvest had been brought in, which means they had to trust that God would indeed provide the fullness of the harvest. Now, why was that a question? I mean, because you go out into like Western Kansas and South Dakota and you see these huge fields. Well, how are they harvesting all these crops? With huge combines. I mean, so you can harvest a huge field in hours, in a day. They weren't doing that. So when they brought in just the initial part of the crop and came together as a nation to have a big celebration, the rest of those crops are sitting out in the field. And that just provides more opportunity for violent weather or whatever to destroy those crops. So the fullness of the harvest was something that, from a human perspective at that point, was still far from certain. So in giving the very first to God, Israel was learning to trust him for their future provision. The generosity of first fruits was an act of obedience rooted in faith that God would provide for the future. And this confidence allowed them to give generously their first and their best in the present, because God had really staked his own reputation on the promise to take care of his people. So they were saying, in essence, God, I'll give you this thing that I have now because I trust you to give me more, to take care of me. Jesus teaches this same thing in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6. He says, we're all prone to worry about the future and the legitimate things that we need. Human nature has not changed. But Jesus teaches that rather than worry about the future, we should seek first God's kingdom. And he promises that all these things will be given to you as well. So giving our first and best in the present is how we demonstrate that we trust God to provide for the future. Now, I just give you some practical, help you understand how this works in practical terms. So we've got two kids in college. And so that's a pretty big deal. I'm going to turn 55 in April, so I can see the end from here. So I'm thinking about retirement. And if our giving was based upon, okay, let's add up all the needs, and then if there's anything left over, we'll give. Guess how much we would give? Zero. Zero. Because there's not enough. We don't have enough to pay for college. There's not enough for retirement. And what we give would actually go a long way toward those things. So the answer is, we don't know how it's all going to happen. And that's the point. And see, we hate that. We hate that. But that's the whole point. So the choice that we have to make as a family, just like the choices you have to make are, well, are we going to be generous and do what God calls us to do? Or are we just going to take care of ourselves? Are we going to be generous and trust God to take care of us? Or are we going to take care of ourselves? We're choosing to be generous and trust that God will take care of us. And so far it's working out. Gigi's a junior. It's paid for. Willa's a freshman. It's getting paid for. And, you know, when I retire, I'll work at Bass Pro Shops. I mean, you know, whatever. Whatever. So let's just take a moment right now and let's ask God for the faith to trust Him. To trust Him. Generous giving. It demonstrates faith in God for the future. And finally, generosity involves joy in what God has done. The Feast of First Fruits, like we said earlier, it wasn't simply an act of discipline. It was a celebration of worship. When the people came together as a nation to give their first fruits, and this is really the key to the whole deal. This is the whole deal right here. When they were giving their first fruits, it wasn't about the loss of something. Let me say that again. It wasn't about the loss of something. When we think about giving, we think about losing. That's not what they thought. Rather, for them, it really was about what God had done and would do for them. And that is worthy of a party. That is worthy of a celebration. And as good a time as they had, we have reason for even more joy. You know, if you do a Bible search for first fruits, it'll pull up all these references, like 25 references in the Old Testament, many of which are connected to this feast of first fruits. But interestingly, there's 7 references in the New Testament. And perhaps the most significant one is from the Apostle Paul, who is writing 1 Corinthians not really that long after Christ's death and resurrection. It's one of the earliest books of the Bible written. And he uses this word, first fruits, but he uses it in a completely different context. He uses it as a description of Jesus. In other words, he's saying, look, first fruits aren't simply what you give to God. First fruits is also about what God has given you in Jesus. You see, in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul is writing about the good news of the resurrection. He's teaching, look, if you're a follower of Jesus, when you die, it's not lights out. It's not game over. And the older I get, the better news that becomes. Our resurrection hope is based upon Jesus Christ, who died in defeat of our sin and then conquered death by being raised to new life. And Paul says Jesus is the first fruits. What's he talking about? He's saying, look, Jesus is the first and the best of a great, a huge resurrection harvest. We have the fullness of life because of Jesus. And so the people who celebrated first fruits, you know, 3,000 years ago, they couldn't see all that. They could only see glimpses of how God would actually fulfill his promises to them. They couldn't see the fullness of God's love, but we can. We can know the love of God in Jesus Christ that gives us the fullness of life now and forever. And that means our generous giving can be even more of a joyous celebration than the Feast of First Fruits, because we know the fullness of life and salvation that we have in Jesus. And so I want us to take a few moments right now to engage in joyous celebration. We're going to sing. I want to ask you to stand. And we're going to sing. And don't sing like Americans. Sing like Ugandans. Really sing. And, you know, we asked you to bring your cards today. If you did that, we're going to have a basket up here somewhere. And you can come put your card in the basket. But really sing. Enjoy to the Lord for who he is and what he has done for you.